Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 10. I'm Dan Tomlinson, and I'm joined, as always, by Rich Harrison, a.k.a. Pommy. Rich, how are you doing, mate?
I'm very well, mate, and you?
Yeah, spot on, thanks, mate. What a win. What an absolute belting Challenge Cup win this weekend as Hull FC beat Wigan 20 points to 10. I mean, that wasn't bad at all, was it?
No, it wasn't. And again, you know, as we talked about last week about the manner of defeat, it was all about the manner of the victory. We ground that one out.
Yeah, it was bloody tough again. And we knew it would be because it's Wigan and that's what you get with Wigan. But it's the mental components of Hull FC that I absolutely love right now. The attitude, the mentality. There's no soft underbelly anymore. And defensively, we are tough. We are resilient. But we get under the skin of our opposition and we rattle them as well. And that's no mean feat against Wigan to do that. And you know, we've done it back-to-back weeks. We just lost out to a controversial penalty goal at their place in Super League, obviously last time out. And now in the Challenge Cup, I thought we had the measure of them. We were controlled in that game. I thought, to be honest, mate, the 16-10 going into the last minute, I thought flattered them.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely it did. Yeah. And you've only got to look as well. You know, they scored two tries down our left edge, their right edge. You know, one so far out that you can't kick the goal. You know, you can't go through the middle of Hull this year. You have to go around the outside of us. And that's a really good sign of a team that's defending for each other. You can just see, mate. I mean, I watched it back again today and about the third time. And, mate, literally the first set after half time was the biggest statement of intent I've seen from a Hull team in years. We kick off, we get down their end, and we batter them. It was fantastic. It's like the first tackle after half-time. I can't remember which one of those drove it in, but three people hit him harder than I think he's ever been hit in his life. It was fantastic. And, you know, it's... I remember reading pre-season, and, you know, you always get a coach that says things pre-season and you take it with a bit of a pinch of salt because the talking's done on the pitch, not in pre-season. But he said, when we're under fatigue, we need to defend like it's set one. When we're absolutely under fatigue, we need to go back to our structure and we need to have that muscle memory to go straight back to what we should be doing and to get back into our routine and back into our sets. And, mate, that was the best example of it I think I've ever seen from a Hull side. We just ground that result out. We did a lot more tackling than they did. You know, it was, you know, kicking on the third tackle to turn the forwards around. It was a smart, gritty display.
Yeah, absolutely. And it obviously built on those defensive foundations that Hodgson's obviously implemented since day one. And you really cannot play down how good defensively we've been this year. It's been absolutely phenomenal to watch. It's been great to see Hull actually have that desire to defend, the hunger to defend, the aggression to defend as well. And that's what it all is. It's all about desire.
They're enjoying it, mate.
Yeah, exactly. They're actually getting a kick out of belting their opposition.
The love of it.
It's great. It's phenomenal to see that, and especially what we've endured after the, you know, over the past 2 years. Yeah. And that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, people say you've won nothing yet. We're seven games into the season in all competitions, and yeah, you're absolutely right, but it's a massive difference to what we've watched over the Hull FC of the past 2 years. And right now,
yeah,
I must say the defensive performances are absolutely reminiscent of what they were under Lee Radford in that first cup-winning year in 2016.
Yeah.
We seem to have that same team cohesion again. There's a camaraderie about them. They've got that closeness again. Defensively, as I say, they're absolutely on point. I think there's still more to come with the ball, but I think that goes hand in hand, the fact that the 1, 6, and 7 have literally played 1.5 games together this year. So I think we'll see that, especially as the summer months come as well. But yeah, defensively, that's how you win trophies, mate. We all know that, don't we? We look at Melbourne Storm in the NRL. They win so many NRL titles. I know they've had a couple straight, but it's all built off defence. And likewise in Super League with Wigan and St Helens, and even Leeds Rhinos recently, they've all won their competitions based off their defence. And right now, Hull FC is on point.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you can, you know, I mean, the fact that we played them the week before and it was a close and fairly, it wasn't a loss that was without its moments of you know, we needed to put a line in the sand this week and just go, we know what you guys are about and we're better than you. And, you know, you could see that from the huddle when they were doing the moment silence for the Kick It Out campaign. You could see that from the fact that Satai was absolutely up for it. With the red mist in his eyes, he wanted to crack everybody. Sal wanted to crack everybody. You know, Andrea Sevelia, 50-odd tackles. You know, it's just, you know, you have a go at Polynesian people at your absolute peril, mate, because I reckon that bottled it. You know, I reckon that Hodgson said to him, this is what this club think of you. Go out there and prove them wrong.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think there was a mental aspect where Hull FC actually got on top of Wigan and they probably did want it more, and maybe they did intimidate him a little bit, because yeah. I tell you what, that Chris Satai performance was the best performance I've seen from a prop in years. That was,
yeah,
that was beyond incredible.
Dominant.
It was
dominant.
Yeah, absolutely dominant.
Absolutely.
It was freakish. It was absolutely outstanding. And once just the two tries, which, you know, took some scoring in themselves, that was literally, you know, I'm going to run harder than you're going to hit me, and I'm going to bang you over, and I'm going to punk that ball down. And he did it twice. I thought the celebration was great. You know, we said, ironically, you know, privately, how we do these podcasts, and then it seems that a player gets banned half an hour after we finish recording. I tell you what, if Satai gets banned for that try celebration, yeah, I'll be absolutely fuming. I'd just say Sam Powell got in the way of the ball. Simple as that.
Surely can. I mean, the referee didn't even mention it, did he?
No, exactly. But then who saw that Fash one coming? I mean, that was a joke. But yeah, Satai,
yeah, no,
absolutely
true.
Immense. It was just the carries, every carry. He was putting people on the backsides, getting quick, winning the floor, quick play of the balls. Defensively was tough. You know, did three stints as well, and I thought we were smart in how we used them as well. First 15 minutes, then obviously got the head assessment, passed that, came back on, and they had a stint in the second half as well. That was just an absolutely phenomenal display from Satai. And ironically, it is one of the blokes that you picked out at the start of the season that's actually going to have a stormer this year. And to some respects, it was nothing new because he has been brilliant literally from the word go. But I thought against Wigan on Saturday, he just took that to an even higher level. I thought it was just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, totally, totally. And look, you wouldn't look at that team and think we're short on props. You wouldn't. That was a dominant forward display. You know, and you and I both know, you know, we've got, obviously, you know, Scott Taylor out and Fash out, and, you know, Matonga, you know, whether he would have played or not, you'd think that if we were short on the forwards, if fit, Matonga's probably in that 17. Mate, we didn't look like we were short of forwards. We absolutely smashed them in with the big fellas. It was really good to see. The player I felt sorry for a little bit, is it Byrne? At Wigan,
yeah,
every time
Liam
he touched
Byrne.
The ball, he either dropped it. Yeah. Oh, poor bugger. I mean, he either dropped it, or he got smashed, or he knocked it on, or, you know, poor bugger. He just had one of those days. But it's just, as soon as we realised he was having one of those days, we gave him every opportunity to make it even worse. You know, we just went back at him and back through the middle and back at him and back at him. And to see Hardacre have a terrible game, brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. It's the quietest I've ever seen Hastings. Because a halfback cannot, we've said it before, a halfback cannot be at his best when his pack is retreating in front of him. And you hardly saw Hastings. You know, it was, mate, fantastic performance.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. Love the fact he mentioned Hardacre. He's come out and said he's the best prop in Super League. He's had a performance where he's outshined by Jake Connor. And now he's had a performance where he's been outshined by Adam Swift and young Connor Wynn. Things you love to see right there.
How good was Swift?
Outstanding.
We need to take a moment, mate. We need to take a moment to just understand the difference that Swift brought to that team. Now, normally he's on the wing. Aerobically, as an athlete, playing on the wing and playing in the fullback position is the difference between being a sprinter and being a long distance runner, I reckon. He's always moving as a fullback. He's backing up around the ruck. He's making runs through that he might not get the ball, but he's still got to break the line in case he does. He's also defending in the middle, and he's being vocal, and he's organising a defence. Mate, he was phenomenal. And when Hodgson picked him and left Wynn on the bench, I was one of those, but I saw a lot of people on Twitter and a lot of people on Facebook saying, that's ridiculous, why recall Wynn and put him on the bench? But honestly, trust the process. Because obviously, Hodgson has seen something in Swift that has said, no, you're the man, you can do this. And Swift was incredible.
Yeah, it was faultless. He really was. Interesting you say trust the process with Hodgson, because someone actually asked me on the Up the Cream Facebook, you know, what would be the fourth prop was the question. I just listed out my 17. I got the pack right, but I got obviously the Swift and Connor Wynn thing wrong. I thought it started, you know, with Wynn, Swift on the wing, and obviously Cam Scott on the bench, but he didn't. It started Cam Scott, who must be said as well, he was, you know, pretty good.
It was fantastic.
People have to say he was caught out for the first try. He wasn't. Griffin was having some verbals with John Bateman, and that's why we got caught out there. It wasn't actually Cam Scott's fault, but yeah, he was solid. As you say, Connor Wynn came on, absolutely solid, and Adam Swift at fullback was, you know, magnificent. So, again, it's a masterstroke from Brett Hodgson, and you're right. We just need to, whatever team he picks right now will do a job, because he's installed that, and it's right throughout the squad, where the attitude and the mentality. He said that he wants them to be closer. He's box ticked there, he's achieved that. But he also said that he wants players to be buzzing for other players' opportunities. And I think right now we're getting that, we're seeing it, you know, week in, week out. And long may that continue. And it just shows that, obviously, you know, it doesn't matter what a bunch of idiots on social media think, you know, me and you included. He's the man for the job. He knows what he's doing. And so far he's been absolutely, you know, bob on in everything he's done.
And, you know, it's rare that you can actually look at a team selection and say, oh, that's controversial and be proved right or wrong. You know, I mean, a coach is never going to pick a team that he doesn't think is going to win. You know, he'll always pick a team that's got the best chance of winning. But it takes a really astute tactician to look at an opposition and go, do you know what? I reckon Swift at fullback and put Cam on the wing and leave Wynn in fullback in case we get, because I mean that did one thing for us, which it meant it covered any back position. That the way that he picked that squad meant that any back went off, you bring Wynn at fullback, you put Swift on a wing, and you move Cam Scott into the centres. You know, or if Swift goes off injured, Connor Wynn comes straight in as a straight replacement, or if the other winger goes off, everyone just shuffles across one. It was perfect, absolutely perfect. And it was only when Griffin went off, Wynn came on, and everything kind of worked out like that. I just kind of went, it's like a little light bulb went off. I just went, oh, of course. That's why he's done it. It's just so obvious. But, you know, genius, absolute genius, mate. It you know, you can't, from 1 to 17, Jack Brown's head explosion aside, which we can have a chat about, but even then he made up for it. Mate, we were brilliant.
Yeah,
Reynolds was quiet, but he didn't need to be anything other than quiet. It wasn't his type of game. It wasn't a swashbuckling open game. His defence was strong. He carried the ball strong, and he organised strong.
I was going to say, never shut up, you know, did he?
Sneed was fairly quiet. Oh God, no. Sneed was fairly quiet, but his kicking game again, sublime. I just wish he'd practice his drop goals a bit more, but you know, mate, we were very good, very good.
Yeah, a lot to like.
And we're only going to get better.
Yeah, that's the scary thing, isn't it? We're 7 games in, and we are only going to get better. We've said that already with the ball. Obviously, there's more to come with the ball, but yeah, as the season goes on, this OSC team is going to evolve even more, and it's a pretty exciting thought to think how far they can go in 2021. I mean, talk of silverware. I mean, well, we're only 80 minutes away from Wembley now. Obviously, St. Helens is a big hurdle to overcome, but we've been there, done that before. So, you know, who knows? Yeah. No one gave Hull a cat in Hull's chance in 2005 or 10 in that Jamie Lyon inspired St. Helens team over. But Hull didn't just do that. They absolutely battered them. So you never know. You get it right on the day, and you never know. He could be booking another trip to Wembley soon. But obviously, there's a few Super League games to negotiate, you know, in that time, and one of those, ironically, is St. Helens, another being Tottenham.
I mean, like we've said, mate, to win the cup, you've got to beat the best, right?
Yep.
And we've been saying all season, it's Wigan, Saints, and Daylight. Do you know? It's Wigan and Saints, and then clear air to any other teams. And we've beaten one of them, and we only just lost to them in the league. You know? Now, we ground a result against Wakefield. You know, we've ground other results out this year. But, you know, I'd probably back us against Saints at the moment. The way we're playing, the way we're playing for each other, you know, you'd back that team to give Saints a bit of a, you know, especially in the forwards, a real contest.
Yeah, absolutely. They haven't hit the heights of the previous 2 years either.
No.
Not yet, anyway.
No.
And, yeah, right now, I mean, ironically, we play them back-to-back weeks as we've just done Wigan when it comes around.
Yeah.
First in Super League, then in the Cup. And yeah, I would back Hull. Maybe not in the league game, who knows, but if you're going to pick one, you take the cup game the week after. That's the one you want to win. But who's to say we can't win both? I mean, the way Hull are playing right now,
yeah.
Went back against them. You know, yeah. Really good. Yeah, we'll go to Jack Brown then. That was the only sour moment in the game, really, wasn't it? And it was the right call to Simbin him. And unfortunately, it was a head explosion. It was a dangerous, you know, when he came in as a third man on the chop, it was dangerous. And he did, it was Liam Bryan again. He had a nightmare, didn't he? Really
yeah, it
did.
Was, yeah.
But talk about intimidation and getting under the skin. Hull did that. But yeah, that was a step too far. The Simbin was the right call. Probably, if you're going down the ban territory route, then it probably will come out later today on Monday afternoon, UK time. But I think it's the right call. What wound me up, though, was there was one by Sam Powell on Josh Griffin, 10, 15 minutes before? Nothing happened, not even a penalty. Yeah. And there's the difference, mate. And that's what gets under people's skin.
Totally. I mean, there's degrees of it. But at the end of the day, you know, there were very, very, very similar tackles. I think the only thing different between the two tackles was that when Ben went down, he kind of doubled back, didn't he? It looked like it cut him in half.
Yeah, it did.
And I think it looked a lot more dramatic, but it's exactly the same tackle.
Yeah.
You know, Griffin couldn't make that movement with his body because he was pinned. He had a guy in front of him and a guy behind him. So he couldn't kind of lean backwards and try and take the pressure out of his knees by doing what Ben did. It's the same tackle. It's exactly the same tackle. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they have a look at the thing and you'd hope with the RFL that if they're going to ban Jack Brown, that they would cite Powell instead as well, you know. But, you know, as we saw last week with the club ban, the RFL are very capable of bottling a hard decision.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't worry, there will be an incoming rant towards that. But right now I'm going to focus on the Gloat Fest that we're having right now with Hull FC. And if we're going, you know, going down that territory, then, yeah, Andrea Savelio, that's how you respond. That, you know, the way he's conducted himself this week has been absolutely outstanding. You know, so firstly speak out about what happened and then put in the performance like he did, just crack on, you know, head down, crack on, like you say, 50, 60 tackles, whatever it was. Played the 80 minutes again, as he has done all season. I mean, how proud? Yeah. We should be absolutely proud as punch to have him at our club right now.
And with a smile on his face, you know, he didn't let himself, didn't let his head go down, didn't seem to. I mean, you know, obviously he's wanted and he's got a point to prove and everything, but he didn't seem to faze him. He didn't seem to make him go into his shell. Still played with a smile on his face. There was a little incident back end of the second half. We had fifth tackle. We were on their left wing, our right edge. Savelio had the ball. And as he was playing it, referee blew his whistle. And I think Hastings thought that Savelio must have knocked it on because he started laughing in his face and clapping his hands and everything. And it wasn't that the ref had just blown up because there was a doctor on the pitch.
I remember that.
You know, game stops. And I think it might have even been for Griffin, actually, when Griffin had was taking an HIA on the pitch. And, Savelio looked at Hastings, who was laughing in his face and clapping, and just laughed back at him. You know, and had a bit of a giggle about it, and obviously just said, you know, hold your horses, mate, I didn't drop the ball, there's a doctor on the pitch, and, you know, we kind of got on with it. There was no verbal, there was no nastiness. You know, if a player's head's wrong because of what's happened to him previously, with a situation like that, when you've got a cocky halfback laughing in your face, the temptation is just to lash out, and he didn't. And he the way he's deported himself this last 7 days has been, you're right, we should be very, very proud to have him as all FC player. And he should be told that over and over and over again, that we are proud to have him, you know?
Absolutely. The way he has conducted himself has been phenomenal. Again, it's that word.
Yeah.
And yeah, because you can't emphasise enough how tough of a week that must have been for him, you know, actually reporting what happened and then obviously seeing it happen and then seeing Tony Club get charged and then seeing the absolute cop-out and the absolute bullshit statement from the RFL, where they've basically said he did it and then retracted from it. And then the actual interview from the RFL spokesperson on the radio this week in the UK, oh Christ, when she's actually denying it even happened, even though it's all there in black and white. I was like, oh Jesus Christ. I know there are a bunch of dinosaurs at the governing body, but Christ. Just, Yeah, unbelievable.
That, I mean, that is that defense. He's not a racist, but he said racist things.
In the heat of the moment.
And I know you should never say that, should you? But can you imagine that defense being used in court? Yeah. Oh, he's not a murderer, but in the heat of the moment, he did pull the trigger. What? No. That's guilty, isn't it?
Absolutely.
He's guilty in every other thing. He said it. He said it. Whether he's contrite, whether he says, I'm sorry I said it, whether he says, I don't mean to say it, whether he says, I'll never said it before. He said it is the point. You know?
Absolutely.
You can't. How can you judge intent? How can you judge what he's like in private? You can't. You can only judge what happened. And what happened was, he said it.
What happened? You know? Yeah, he used these ethnic, Andreas Velho's ethnic background to take an insult at him. Yeah. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, to try and gain an unfair advantage on the pitch. You know, he wouldn't have said it to him in the bar. He wouldn't have said it to him if he passed him in the tunnel. He wouldn't have said it to him as he was getting on the coach. He said it to him on the field. And on the field is to try and gain an unfair advantage, because you say something like that, the other player lashes out, you get the penalty. It's an unfair advantage. And it's cynical, and it's nasty, and it's insidious, and it needs to stop. Right? Now, Wigan haven't come out and said he didn't say it. His teammates haven't come out and said he didn't say it. Club hasn't come out and said I didn't say it. No one has denied that he said it, apart from the RFL. You know? It's ridiculous.
It's an absolute threat.
It makes no sense. He didn't come back on the pitch. The reason he didn't come back on the pitch was because Wigan made an example of him and said, if you do that, we're not playing you. He didn't come back out to shake hands afterwards. He was nowhere to be seen after he said it. Dodgy. And 8 matches is not enough. And 2 weeks' wages or whatever. Bloody hell. And he's, you know, in he's back training with the team now. So he's back earning his wages. Yeah. And you know, we said last week we have to trust the process, and we have to wait and see what the RFL come up with. And I think I said at the time, I agree with you, but I've got no confidence.
Yeah,
and I've got even less confidence now.
Yeah. It's like you've been watching the game for decades and know exactly what they're all about.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, it's an absolute disgrace. I mean, we can sort of say, okay, a Brad Fash, bam. I mean, I just couldn't get my head around it. I really couldn't. I noticed the ex-RFL official / commissioner / Hull FC fan, Mark Charton, so there might be a little bit of bias there, but he said he didn't see anything in it whatsoever, and I'll take that over it. And you sort of think, okay, I can accept that. Sometimes you can make mistakes, you can get things wrong, but to get that wrong, even though all the evidence is screaming in front of you, and you know, with what Tony Club did, with what obviously Wigan did to get him out of that ground, to what Andreas Velho said, I mean, there's the first point. They're saying now that Andreas Velho is basically a liar because they're not standing with him. They haven't agreed with what he said. What does that say to a young kid, right? If you're, I don't know, a young kid of an island origin or an African origin or a Caribbean origin, you play rugby league in the UK right now and you'll get racially abused, I don't know, in a game in the Yorkshire League or in the National Conference. What message does that send out? Oh, you're just going to get a slap on the wrist, you'll get an 8-game ban, you'll get a couple of weeks' wages fine. When you've got all these tackle-out campaigns and you've got the 13-second stance before every rugby league game, it's just, you know, talk about empty gestures. Clearly they don't care. Clearly it's just box-ticking. I just think it's absolutely disgusting, to be honest. The Rugby League Football League, how they've handled it has been absolutely atrocious. And I will say how Hull FC have handled it has been absolutely exemplary. I mean, they could have gone on the high horse and had an absolute rant and called them out.
And to be honest, and Wigan as well. You know, that joint statement was the right thing to do. You know? And only operating under the rules that the RFL have given. If the RFL have said, 8-match ban, well, then then we're going to go in. We need to keep him fit for when, you know, the 8 matches are out, so he's back in training. You know, we would do exactly the same. You know, he's a rugby league player. He needs to play his trade. If he's not playing, he should be training. So therefore, you've got to keep him fit. So you can't really have that much of a go at Wigan about it. But let me just put this to you, right? And this is a little bit of devil's advocate. Do you think that he got a lesser ban because of his age? Because if he'd have got a ban to the end of the year, that's probably going to finish his career. Because he's 33.
Yeah.
If that was a 23-year-old Tony Club that did it, I reckon he'd have got a ban till the end of the year. But because he's 33 and it's likely to be his last year at Wigan, I reckon that's a big part of him being lenient.
It's a fair shout. I still think age is irrelevant to me. It should be absolutely relevant. Don't matter if you're 18 or 38. But no, I get what you're saying. And you probably, yeah, you could be right in there. Or maybe it's just, like we say, the total complete incompetence that we see from the governing body day to day. But
I'm giving him an excuse.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. You can see them saying things like that. Oh, he's 33. Oh, it might be his last season. Who knows? Oh, he plays for Wigan. Oh, we like Wigan, don't we? You know, they're the team that brought the salary cap by £500,000 to stay up in 2006, but we just gave them a slap on the wrist then, so we'll give them another one this year. Who cares?
Yeah,
it's Wigan. They can do what they want. Nah, I like Wigan. You know, I'm a bit different to the average LFC fan there who absolutely hates them. I've got a lot of respect for the club because I love their processes and I love their systems. Mm. I love how defensively tough they are and I love the fact that they compete for silverware pretty much year on year. I mean, you can count on one hand over the past 30 years the amount of times that they haven't actually competed for a trophy, where they've had a season where they've been mid-table or whatever.
Totally, mate. Totally. And they are the them and Saints are the gold standard.
Absolutely. Totally. And I love that. But I tell you what, there is a lot to dislike about them as well. You think the Hardacre, signing him, he shouldn't be in the game.
Yep.
I've said that loads of times on local radio in Hull, obviously on the podcast when we did it on SoundCloud, obviously on the podcast as we do it now. I've said that Zach Hardacre should not be in the game. He's had so many chances. He's literally completed the bloody book for, you know, the dickhead policy. And they signed him. They've got drink drivers in that team. They had the young Aussie. Was it Gabe Hamlin? They had to get rid of him because he was a drug cheat. And they do leave a little bit to desire there. I know, obviously, it is a little bit of hypocrisy there because, obviously, we love Steve Michaels and we all know what obviously happened to him when he came back to Australia. So, I know players have histories and they're not all squeaky clean. I mean, we're not all squeaky clean either. I'm sure we've had moments where we've done something that we think, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. But
there's a difference though between standing behind a player that's done something when he's on your books and signing a player knowing his background.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's the difference. And that's why you know, it was the wrong thing and always will be the wrong thing that we signed Gleeson. Because everyone knew we had problems.
Yeah.
Do you know? And we still went ahead and signed him. And boy, did that bite us in the ass.
It did.
You know, so, you know, there's one thing standing behind a Steve Michaels who, when we signed him, we knew nothing of this. And then there was a warrant out for his arrest when we signed him. And we stood by him because he wasn't going to go back to Australia and he was going to stay with us for 2 years. And we negotiated with Australia to say, look, when he finishes with us, we'll deliver him straight to you, basically. And that's exactly what happened. So I agree. It's people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And, you know, I am sure that in the next 5 years, we'll have a player that either, you know, I don't know, punches his missus or drink drives or gets done for something else. I'm sure we will, because that's life. The difference is how you deal with it as an organisation. And I'd rather have an Adam Pearson than a James Rowell, you know? And at the moment, I'd rather have an Adam Pearson than a Chris Radlinski, because I don't think morally he's doing a great job at Wigan.
No, not morally. I mean, like you said before, you said that Wigan haven't come out and apologised for it. You know, there's been nothing. I don't know. They might have done it privately, which is okay, fair enough. Maybe it's been done in house, and maybe they rang Andrea, or maybe they rang the LFC training ground up and said, "Can we speak to Andrea?" Maybe he did apologise. We don't know that, but there should have been a public apology. And
there was certainly no apology on the day, was there?
Exactly.
Because then Andrea wouldn't have gone out and put that social media post up.
Well, yeah, exactly. If he got an apology and a shake hands and whatnot and a really sorry, mate, I've been completely bang out of order, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he wouldn't have put that post out.
The other thing is, though, mate, sometimes an apology looks like an admission of guilt. And if they thought that they had a chance of fighting it, and then Sibelius said, well, why would you apologise to me then? If it's not true, why would you apologise to me? Then maybe they were just a little bit careful that they didn't want to do the admission.
But then that just shows morally, doesn't it, what they are as a club and an organisation. I mean, God forbid I ever do anything like that, but if I did, I'd like to think I'd be remorseful, you know, and actually look for a sincere and genuine apology. I mean, if I was Andrea right now, I'd probably be fuming that I ain't got one, and which again speaks more of his character, the fact that he's just gone on with it and put in another blunder of a performance on the field.
Exactly. And then speaks about why he did 58 tackles or whatever it was and tore the game up. Absolutely. Talking of which, right, if we're talking about the RFL, because believe it or not, I do a little bit of research for these chats occasionally. And I thought, oh, well, I'll have a look at the RFL website and I'll see if I can get the stats. You know, who top tackled, top meet again. You know, because I wanted to see how many meters Swift had made because I thought he was fantastic. I certainly wanted to see how many meters that Satai had made and everything. On the RFL Challenge Cup website, nothing. You can't even get a match report.
Which is ridiculous. Awful. That's amateur, isn't it?
I mean, that is there is the absolute microcosm of why the RFL will never be able to grow the sport unless they get their bloody house in order. Nothing. Super League, great. Super League one, you can look up anything.
Yeah, you can.
Right?
Yeah.
But the RFL one, they're stuck in the 70s. You know? They're stuck in the, oh, you know, Eddie Waring, up and under, silk cut, 3/5, tobacco sponsorship, Challenge Cup. They really are, mate. They really are. They're stuck there. Whereas, you know, you look at the Super League website and it's all razzmatazz and it's got, you know, it's got everybody's stats and you can go through team by team and all the rest of it. The RFL, absolutely appalling. And I understand it's a bigger game than Super League and it's a bigger game than the Challenge Cup and they've got all the grassroots stuff and everything. But, you know, employing a statistician, because all those stats will be there. It's just a case of someone uploading them to the website.
Exactly. I mean, they're given out by Opta, aren't they? Someone's got the stats because I think Old posted the figures for Andre. There was Danny Outon, obviously, Shock Horror, and someone else.
Yeah.
I can't remember the third person, but they did put some stats out saying, you know, what a shift from these three players.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but I'm a bit of a nerd, mate, like you are. I like to look and actually go, you know, meters after contact and all that kind of stuff, because there was a couple of runs there where Swift in particular hit the line and then just carried on pumping his legs and maybe made another 5, 8, 10 meters after contact, which is phenomenal for a little bloke like that. So I was really interested to have a look, but I couldn't find anything.
I'd love to know that, the meters after contact, because I thought, like we just said, defensively, absolutely brilliant. With attack, we could have been a little bit more clinical. We said that the scoreline flattered Wigan, but one thing that we was absolutely incredible was our yardage and our ability to rampage downfield. I thought we absolutely steamrolled Wigan. We didn't get pinned. I mean, there was a few times where literally we took three on the front foot drives and literally Sneed put the ball, you know, kicking into the corners. I thought going forward, we were brilliant in terms of yardage, just a little bit more maybe polished execution when we got down the Wigan end. There certainly was a couple of opportunities where we could have posted more points, maybe, you know, arguably a try or two, but you know, I ain't going to complain so much on that front. I just thought, yeah, the meter-making abilities are incredible. And like you say, you think we didn't have a Scott Taylor, who is huge in that. You know, he's a prop that'll make 100-plus metres every single game. Didn't have Brad Fash, who's obviously started the year superbly. There was no Massimo Tonga, who would have done something, you'd like to think, in a game like that if he was playing. And you left on two little lads. And I think this really does need pointing out in Jordan Lane and Joe Cater, who both did really tough spells in the middle. They are little in stature, but that with the hearts of an absolute lion. They've both been picked for the England Knight squad. And everyone talks about these Wigan forwards, your Morgan Smithers, your Liam Burns, your Oliver Parsonsons. Yeah. What about these two young old lads? They are incredible.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And, you know, from a purely PR point of view, you know, to actually have that kind of stuff and you know, create a tweet around it, create a Facebook post around it, make a bit of a song and dance. Incredible figures from player, you know. Adam Swift, standing fullback, made 150 metres of 15 carries or whatever. Do you know? The NRL do that hourly. Hourly. You know? The RFL, you're lucky if you see it ever.
Yeah.
And it's just wrong. I mean, I tell you a mark of how seriously the Super League and the RFL are taken by, like, the BBC. You look at the BBC website and go to the league tables, there isn't a mention of percentages. Not a mention. It's just one lost, 2 points, 1 point for a draw, no points for a loss. Not a mention of percentages if you look on the BBC website. Not one. So they haven't bought into it, have they, as a concept? Because it's not been sold to them properly by the people that are making the rules above.
To be fair, I haven't either. Oh, man, I've got 2021 left season. I've got fixtures. I've got the table as it should be, you know, in points.
Well, because you know, most of these things, they'll work on an algorithm. And they'll work on, you know, it'll be like an Excel spreadsheet. Yeah. They'll put all the information in and it'll throw it up. You know, and they're not going to change it just for the sake of one league of one sport. You know, it's a basic tenet of British sport that it's, you know, 3 points for a win in soccer and 2 points for winning practically every other game and 1 point for a draw and 9 points for a loss.
Yeah.
They're not going to start changing stuff just for that. You know, and it's just, like you say, it's just, it beggars belief to me that you had a game like that, that, all right, you know, no 100-metre tries apart from Swift's the one right at the end. You know, no massive breaks. A real old-fashioned bash and crash war of attrition with tremendous defensive figures from both sides, because Wigan did plenty of tackling too. Tremendous meter-making from players. And, you know, hardly any errors and, you know, fantastic completion rates. That's an example of when our sport's at its absolute best. And that's a real missed opportunity by the RFL to actually sing from the rooftops about it. I saw a tweet from the RFU from when England were playing the Six Nations, and one of the props made 3 runs for 40 metres, and they were actually having wet dreams about it. 3 runs for 40 metres. I could do that myself. Do you know? It's just, you know, I don't get why we constantly shoot ourselves in the foot. I just, it annoys me.
We said something after, in the midst of taking the mick out of Rovers when obviously lost the Challenge Cup game in Golden Point. So who else but Gareth O'Brien? And obviously the game was one of the longest ever recorded for extra time. And the superhuman efforts, I think it was Adam Quinlan, the Rovers fullback, ran like 11 kilometres or something really stupid. And the figures, there was players making 70, 80 tackles. It was like Danny Outon territory again. And that should have been plastered everywhere because, you know, we all know the score with Rovers. I hope they, you know, get sent into a, you know, obliviation. But at the end of the day, what those two teams did that day was absolutely phenomenal. As rugby league athletes, they should be championing that and screaming it from the rooftops. Look how good we are. But they don't, because like you say,
it seems to be left to the club, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. It's left to the club. I mean, oh, we're quite good for it, to be fair. I know we are very good on social media. I know our social engagement. Well, I know that for a fact. Our social engagement is the best in the comp. Obviously, our fans are obviously sad and sit on Facebook and Twitter every day. But, we are really good in what we post.
I reckon I'm a big part of that.
Yeah, I reckon I am too. But, we are very good in that respect. We will champagne our players. We'll, you know, sing from the rooftops how good they are, what they've done. I mean, Penrith are really good for it as well in the NRL. I noticed Brian Toho made 132 post-contact metres. Some players will be buzzing to get 132 metres, you know, running an open ground.
At all, yeah. And I mean, you know, you got to remember what post-contact metres are. That's metres when someone's hanging off you.
Literally.
That's ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah, it is ridiculous.
What do you think, he's five foot six and about 10 stone as well?
Talking of ridiculous stats, did you see Tom Trbojevic?
Yes. What a return to the manly side he has. Yeah.
That was insanity. This week, you know, was it 8 line breaks, 5 line break assists, 2 tries, 190 metres or something? It was just ridiculous. Yeah,
not a bad afternoon
absolutely
work.
Ridiculous. And then you talk about, Josh Adokar scoring 6 tries, and yeah, what a weekend.
Yeah, I was surprised that they were saying when Josh Adokar did get his 6 tries for Melbourne, I was thinking, oh yeah, equaling rugby league records. I was expecting to hear all that, and obviously Martin O'Fire's thinking, well, I scored 10 in 1992, I'll pipe down. But
yeah, come back when you've scored another hat-trick and one extra.
Yeah, but they didn't, to be fair. They did say, you know, I think the exact wording was in Australia when it came out, so I was like, okay, fair play.
Yes.
So when it like 1971, 1972, something like that, last time it was done in Australia. So it was a fair effort, but obviously not Martin O'Fire standards.
Phenomenal effort. Yeah, phenomenal effort. And, you know, to think that he's going to be at the Bulldogs next year, he probably won't score 6 tries all season.
Yeah.
The way they're playing. You know, the worst coached team in the NRL, apart from the Tigers. They're, he's, luckily, he's going to have Burton inside him from the Panthers, which is going to help. But until they sort out the halfback, I mean, the ball's got to get there first for him to do anything with it. And he's got to get there in space. You know, and I didn't really rate Justin Ollam at the Storm, the Papua New Guinean centre. Thought he was a little bit I didn't think he was very savvy. I thought, you know, he's bash and crash and he'll run through a brick wall, but I didn't think he'd have a really good football brain. Mate, the reason Adakar scored six tries is because of complete unselfish and creative play from his centre. You know, probably four of those tries were completely due to Justin Olam.
Yeah, that's fair. Absolutely. But yeah, the Adakar stuff, I suppose it's like a Tommy Makinson, or dare I say a Sam Tompkins, a Jake Connor right now, obviously the best players in Super League, going to a Lee. That's what it's like, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, poor old Wakefield, yeah. That's what it's like, isn't it? Nuts.
Totally, you know. Yeah.
But I suppose if,
really is.
Like you say, if you value then, you family,
know, you've got the Storm. Yeah, he has got problems with his family, he has wanted to get back to Sydney for a long, long, long time. So that's fair. But you know, Storm went straight out and went, well, okay, that's really bad PR that our top scoring winger is leaving and everything. And, you know, he'd signed for the Bulldogs pre-season this year. Everyone knew he was going to the Bulldogs next year because he made a really, there was, you know, he was being toured around South and he was toured around the Tigers, and then he plumped for the Bulldogs. But then right on the heels of him scoring six tries this week, when a Storm fan base could be thinking, you know, bloody hell, we're losing our best player and that's awful and everything, the Storm come out and immediately announce Xavier Coates from the Broncos. You know, so taking the best player out for poor side there and putting him into that Storm system. Whoa.
And he's rapid.
Next year.
He's so rapid, isn't
he? Xavier Coates next year, mate, he's going to fly. It really is.
Again, how many times do we big up Melbourne and say about, you know, systems, processes, about how they are as a club? That's how you do it, innit? You know, you think, oh, we're losing our best winger, arguably the best winger, you know, certainly one of the best wingers in the comp. Obviously, that tag falls to Brian Toa. I would say that as a Penrith Panther. But, you know, you're losing, as you say, one of your best players at your club. What do? We'll go announce Xavier Coates on a big, you know, big lucrative contract. And that's talk about the eye on the prize, innit?
Totally. And what did we say last week? You know, we were talking about Leeds and we were talking about, you know, you had to replace players with a player that was better, equal or better, you know? You've got Adokar. Yeah, he's a freak. Yeah, he's one of the quickest players in the game. But, you know, again, it's all about speed with him. Another year, going to get a little bit slower. He's going to have to change his game a little bit. He's getting towards 30. So what do? You go straight out, you sign a 21-year-old Xavier Coates. Hottest prospect in the game. You know? Yeah, we're losing this guy, but we've had the best years out of that guy, and he's only going downhill from here. Look at the guy we've got replacing him.
Yeah.
Do you know? That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
What a great... I mean, you know, you'll always be down on Melbourne because of the years that they wrote in the salary cap and all the rest of it, and you know, the two premierships that got chalked off and all the rest of it. But honestly, what a sporting organisation they are. They really are. They're the pinnacle in our game.
Absolutely. I agree. And again, like a Wigan, like a Leeds, like a Manly, they're easy to hate. But you sort of dive, you know, club allegiance aside a little bit deeper and you think, yeah, wow, that's how, you know, you'd love your club to be run. And dare I say, Hull FC, are we getting towards that right now? I mean, I'll cut the way we run right now, and literally we've got a club chairman, owner, whatever you want to call him, in Adam Pearson, and then we've got a CEO in James Clark who literally does everything else. And that's dangerous. I mean, I know for a fact Clark, he works himself into the absolute ground and does too much, but that's the type of bloke he is. He's hands-on, you know, his work ethic is absolutely outstanding. But where we're getting it right at the moment, maybe arguably one winger too many on the salary cap, is we've got a balanced squad. We've got a squad that's hungry. We've got a squad, the right type of person, you know, personnel within that squad. We're obviously the buzzing for each other. They're buzzing for all the opportunities that they're getting. They're obviously buying into everything that the coach is implementing. Defensive attitude, mentality, you know, it's all absolutely outstanding. And
totally.
You know, you can't really praise that enough. And I suppose right now it'll be more of the same in terms of who we let go, who we keep, and obviously who we bring in for next year. And with the deadline for, obviously, you can speak to who you want now, can't you? Agents can speak to other clubs. It'll be interesting to see what comes out in terms of who already has signed and obviously who's still to negotiate.
Yeah, I mean, George Lawler's on the market, isn't he? Because he's decided he wants out of Rovers. And I think Radford has really made a beeline for him for next year for Cass.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be upset with George Lawler at Hull. I think he's a shining light at Rovers. He's probably, but I'd say he's been consistently the best player for a couple of years. There's an option for us. But going back to the setup and like you say about people doing too much and stuff. I read a really interesting viewpoint, and in fact, I heard it on the radio. There was a guy who rang in to a phone in on the weekend on Triple M in the Sydney thing, which we can get up here. And he said that he was really worried about the West Tigers because Maguire. He said, when you look at the coaching box, you don't recognise the assistant coaches. It's just three old blokes with clipboards, so I've no idea who they are, right?
Yeah.
And the guy said, well, what's that got to do with anything? So he said, look at the teams that have been successful recently, right? You look at the Storm. Every time you look at the Storm, there's either an ex-player who's getting into the coaching ranks, or there's a Steve Kearney before that, or there's an Adam O'Brien that's now at Newcastle that was sat next to Bellamy. There's always someone that's capable of being a first-grade coach themselves sat next to the head coach. Look at the Roosters. They've always had Fitzgibbon sat in there. They've had Jason Taylor, even though I don't like him. He's a really good assistant. He's a shit head coach, but he's a good assistant. They've always had Steve McNamara was there. They've always had people in the coaching box that are capable of doing a head coaching job themselves. Panthers the same. Cameron Seraldo and Trent Barrett, no matter what you think of him as a head coach, really good defensive coach, attacking coach, sorry. The best teams for the last 5 years have had a coaching team, not just a head coach. They've had people sitting in that box that you look at and go, I wouldn't mind him at my club, even though he's not the head coach. You know? And then you look at someone like Cronulla and they've got Craig Sandercock sitting there.
Speaks for itself,
you know? And you think, yeah, all right, okay, you know. Or you look at the Dragons coaching box yesterday. Had Peter Gentle sitting in there.
Mm.
Did Peter Gentle running water last week? You know, and he was obviously he finished off as interim coach at the Broncos at the end of last year when they got rid of what's his name, who's now the guy who was at Brisbane last year. He's now assistant coach at. At the Knights, the Newcastle Knights. So, you know, there's that bit of a merry-go-round, but you surround yourself with people that make you better as a coach, you know? And arguably, did Radford do that with last? I don't know. Do you know? You'd like to think that... I mean, mate, I've had a lot of Tigers supporters talk to me and saying, you know, if we get rid of Maguire, do you think there's any chance we could get Brett Hodgson? I really have. And bloody hell, I hope they keep their hands off him. I really do. I don't want him to be a two-season coach. I don't want him to be a one- or two-season coach for us, mate. He's got to stay around for 5-10 years because what he's putting in place now, and with all of this national youth thing going on that we're going to have little centres of excellence everywhere, there's every chance that this is the time that we need a really steady hand on the wheel.
Yeah, absolutely, to bring these kids through, yeah. I like your point that you made with Radovan last because obviously... You know, having that one dominant voice worked for the first couple of years. Maybe could you then argue that maybe there needed to be a new voice in like maybe, you know, 2018, 2019, 2020? Oh, obviously you would say yeah, because obviously it ended pretty badly and obviously Lee Radford was...
But we did.
We did need that extra voice. Well, we had Kieran Patel come in, didn't we?
We had Kieran Patel came in, didn't we? But I don't know whether he's a strong enough character to actually... You know, sometimes you get like a dominant character that you know, everyone just kind of bows down to, and maybe that was Radford. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the way we did coach. Obviously, it worked. He had moments in the whole FC hot seat. That'll, you know, they need no introduction, do they? He'll be immortalised for what he did at Wembley alone. But obviously, the rest of it left a little bit to desire. What I like about Hodgson now is you've got Gareth Ellis in there. No one's not telling me that Gareth Ellis hasn't had an impact on the defensive side of the FC's game. We're defending like 13 Gareth Ellis's. We are horrible.
Yes.
We are nice off the field, just like Gaz's, but we are an absolute nuisance on it. And we are, tough like Gaz was. We are aggressive like Gaz was. Off the field, we conduct ourselves immaculately, just like Gaz did.
Yep.
I mean, the resemblance there, it can't just be uncanny. There's got to be something in it.
Yep. And you know, from what we've said before as well, the lines that a Savelio and a Lane are running, they're Gareth Ellis lines.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know, as a second row forward, it's all you can ask for, is to run the same lines that Gareth Ellis used to run. Because, mate, when he was playing for the Tigers over here, that year that we got to the semi-finals over here, 2011, 12, and we were close to winning it that year. I actually spoke to Gareth Ellis at Kayama when the guys came across for the Wigan game and the St George game, and then I said to him, as a bloke that supports the two teams that you've played for recently, I said, you know, I honestly think that the most horrible thing for me was knowing that we should have probably won the comp that year. And he said it's the biggest regret of his career, he said to me. Because he said he knows that year they could and should have won everything. You know, because he was superb that year. And the lines he ran, mate, he was scoring tries for fun that year. And he was devastating. And you had Benji putting him into holes, and then you had other people backing him up. And just, mate, he was, like you say, a wrecking ball on the field and a gentleman off it. Absolutely. And, mate, his stamp is all over Hull FC at the moment, all over it. He's a class bloke. And, you know, hopefully that fits that bill that I've just said. You know, when you've got a team that's got a head coach and you've got assistants that could take a job. You know, yeah. Kieran Pirtle's been a head coach. He's been a Super League head coach. You know, Ellis could be a head coach and probably will be a career coach. You know, and hopefully it'll be a, you know, when Hodgson does go, we get that bit of, consistency, and we get like a linear transition to hopefully someone like a Gaz Ellis in charge who knows the club and knows the ethos and commands and demands respect.
Absolutely, I agree, and I do worry a little bit, like you say, with your Hodgson point, if his impact continues and improves at all. Is it? I think I might say it's a 3-year contract. I think that's right. Definitely two. I think certainly two, perhaps 3-year contract. But yeah, you're sort of thinking some of these NRL rabbles, not to rub it in. But yeah, you're sort of thinking.
No, totally.
They're going to come calling.
Totally, mate. Look what's happened at the Titans.
Yeah, we've just been Holbrook. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
it's like an overnight turnaround.
With Holbrook.
Yeah, what the job he's done there is obviously outstanding. Yep. He's proven he's a capable NRL coaches, obviously, as well as ripping Super League up, and who knows down the line. What also worries me is people like Chris Satay, who are out of contract this year, and he puts in performance like that. How many people in the NRL are going to have their heads turned? Because I don't think you can play how good that was. He was outstanding.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We need to do our business quick. We need to let the players know that we want to keep, and we need to let them know quick. And you know, Satay and Asai, Satay and Asau have got to be there. As I've, you know, we've got to get Connor signed.
Yeah.
You know, and I know people are saying it's imminent and it's close and he's verbally agreed. Get that bloody name on the paper. Let's not have another bloody Paul Cook. Yeah. You know? Let's get that name on the paper and let's get our business sorted. And then let's tell those players that we're going to let go. Let's tell them early. Let them go somewhere else. You know, let Radford take them at Cass. You know? You know, let Cass become another Wakefield that's full of ex-Hull players.
Yeah.
Sodom, who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, let them become our retirement ground. Let them go to Rovers, you know? Let's be ruthless and let's get players in that want to play for us and that are going to be better than the ones we're letting go.
And that's what it's all about, isn't it? That's what a lot of process is and how we evolve as a club. To the other side of the world then, I mean, the NRL gets better and better, I must admit. I absolutely love watching it every weekend like a sad git. But there was one story which dominated off the field, and that was the Jared Hayne stuff. Obviously, he's been convicted, sentenced. He's been found guilty of sexual assault. Yeah. And I'm going to mention two players, Tony Williams, Chris Dantino, defending it, victim blaming after a court case like that. Come on, lads, switch your heads on. Yeah. But one club, Salford, stood him down, didn't play him. The other one, New York Freedom, part of the new North American League that kicks off in June. Yeah. Obviously, signed Tony Williams on a bumper contract, saw what he's put, and basically said, we can't control what players say, but we can control how we respond. Off your pot, pal. Yep. We don't want you anymore. That's how you do it.
Yeah, and he got sacked from the club that he's currently playing at over here as well, Wyong Roos. He got sacked from them as well. So we were at, you know, second division, third division side. So, good. Good. Interestingly, actually, just before I started talking to you, the Jack DeBellin case has been adjourned again. The jury couldn't agree. They said no to one count and couldn't agree on the other five counts. Judge sent them back and said, I'll accept 11, an 11-1 verdict, you know, rather than all 12. And they came back and said, we've got three or four people that are completely unchangeable, so we can't say yes or no. So judge said, right, OK, mistrial, no trial, and dismissed it again. Now it's up to the public prosecutor whether he wants to go again, because this will be the third trial if it goes again. But De Bellany still stood down. Because of the no fault rule that the NRL brought in. So very interesting, mate. And again, the difference with De Bellin and Hayne is a Islander, born again Christian, and only recently a born again Christian as well. That this is one of the things that people are saying is that, you know, he was always a bit of a plastic Christian, they always said, you know, he kind of paid a little bit of lip service to it. But when he got charged, and also you've got to remember, he paid off the woman in America that said he did the same thing to her in America when he was playing for the 49ers. Since all that kind of stuff's happened, immediately he's retreated into his faith and said, no, I'm a man of God and all the rest of it. And he's kind of hiding behind that a little bit. And I think that's why a lot of those Islander players kind of come together and say, oh, you know, no, I've seen him singing and I've seen him praying and I've seen him blah, blah, blah. Interestingly, no one's doing that to Jack De Bellin, because Jack De Bellin isn't an Islander, isn't a Christian, and no player has come to his defence and said, Jack's this, Jack's that, Jack's a good bloke. Nobody. So very interested to see what happens next. But I agree. What New York did, dead right. And hopefully Salford will do the same with Inning.
They've got to. I know to some people this kind of rugby league conversation does get a little bit tedious, but I know a few other blokes and lasses do as well. Obviously, I'm involved in Cop Tigers now, and I don't want my under 11s acting like that, you know, 10, 11 year old kids. And these are the players, you know, they look up to these players. And if they do something wrong, they've got to know that you will get punished for it. And it's about setting values as well within your club and your organisation. And it just can't be tolerated. It's as simple as that.
Totally. And, like you say, it's, unfortunately, we're going to have to keep talking about it because it happens too often.
Yeah, it needs calling out, especially the racism stuff. And I'm glad that I think 95% of the fans, and certainly on Twitter on my timeline, were calling out Tony Club. And I don't think I've seen a fan defending, well, maybe some fruitcakes in Australia, but, you know, obviously my mates, no one's been defending Jared Hayne. How can you? You know, he's convicted. It's simple as that. You know, he's behind bars now. It's simple. Yeah, you can't go down that road. It's very, very, very dangerous. And yeah, hopefully Salford will come out and do the right thing. And maybe even Sevelio might even get an apology soon as well. Who knows? But yeah, moving.
Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, but moving on then. Hull FC connections, NRL connections.
Oh, yeah.
Go in with Balmain Tigers this week. Obviously, the leagues club that you worked for when you first moved over to us.
Yeah, and I did a bit of work for them, looking at when it was the 100th anniversary of Rugby League in Australia 2008, because we were a bit late to the party over here. They were looking at trying to get every surviving Tigers player in for a big, you know, like a big celebration. And because of that, I volunteered and said, look, let me see if I can track down all the ex-players that are in England. You know, so there's quite a few, actually, not just from Hull FC either. I mean, Brian Lockwood, who was at Rovers and at Widnes and about five other clubs, more clubs than Seve Ballesteros. He was one of the players that we contacted. We also contacted Dave Topless and Gary Schofield and Lee Crooks, because they'd all had small stints over here as well. And also, I had the great honour of being the bloke who rang Ellery Hanley up to invite him over as well, which was really nice. I think I woke him up. I don't think he was too happy with me, but when he realised what it was about, it was all good. So there's actually quite a few. There's a lot of English players played for Balmain, which is unusual. We had quite a few Hull players play for Balmain, like I say. Crooks and Schofield both had stints at Balmain, as did Dave Topless. But the earliest one I can find, and at the time I was doing my little bit of research at the club, he was one of the oldest surviving Balmain players. There's a guy called George Watt, who played hooker for Hull just after the war. Was a Balmain player in the 50s, 40s and 50s. Came over to Hull and played for Hull and actually captained Hull for four or five seasons, I think. And then when he retired, stayed in Hull. So he was an Aussie bloke who was an ex, I think he was an ex-Australian international, certainly played for the what used to be the New South Wales representative team, played for Balmain, played for Eastern Suburbs, which are now the Roosters, and played for Hull as well, and was Balmain's oldest surviving player for a long time, actually. He died a couple of years back. Yeah, he was living Boothfree Estate, believe it or not, ex-Kangaroo, and most of the people that lived around there wouldn't have known it at all, would they?
Probably not, no. But
probably not.
Yeah, I would never have guessed that. An ex-Kangaroo player living on Beaufree Estate within a 10-minute walk of Hesel Foreshore, and you got Bondi Beach on the other side of the world. Tough place, that, mate.
A little bit different. Other names to conjure with, then. John Muggleton, who was over at Hull 85 and 86 seasons. It was... Peter Sterling's brother-in-law, I think, second row forward, played for us at Wembley in 85. More known as a Parramatta player, but did start his career with his brother, actually, in the early 80s at Balmain. Obviously, James Grant, who we've mentioned before, and Dave Brooks as well, were both Hull FC players and Balmain players. Scotty Gale as well, who we mentioned in a North Sydney player as well. He's an ex Balmain player as well. And that's more or less it. And then we talk actually Damien McGarry, who came mid-season to us and in fact, I think I might be wrong here, but I think one of his first games was Brian Smith's last game.
Right.
In fact, I think it might have been his first game and Smith's last game was against Leeds at the Boulevard when Brian Smith was chaired off the pitch. And he played half a season for us to Damien McGarry. Started mid-season and then was the starting centre at Old Trafford when we won the Premiership in 91 with Damien McGarry. And a very good player he was as well. Jimmy Grant, like I said, who was an ex. James Grant was an ex Wallaby. He was an ex-Union international, was signed for the Balmain Tigers, and he was very, very quick, was James Grant. And he had a couple of stints with us, but then was more or less... I think he finished his career off at Perth Western Reds, who we can probably talk about in future. Apart from that, that's about it, really, as far as I could see. The other one, actually, and I have got a bit of a story... about this guy. Now, this was about 1988 when Hull got to the semi-final of the Cup and we drew 0-0 with Halifax. Now, people that are my vintage and older will remember this very, 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 very clearly. And also the fact that the replay only had one try in it as well. The replay was 4-3 to Halifax. And the player who scored the try for Halifax was Tony Anderson, who ended up being our assistant coach under McRae. But playing in the Hull team, both of those games, was a player who was an absolute head case, Terry Regan. Second row forward or prop, an absolute loose cannon, Terry Regan. Now, when I was working at Balmain Leagues Club, there was a function on one night. There'd been a game at our Oval, and it was an ex-players function. So we had all the ex-players there. All the big famous faces of the club. So I was like a kid in a candy shop. It was the night that I'd first spoken to Dave Brooks and first spoke to Grant, and they said, "Oh my God, you're a whole lad." And, you know, I was like treated like a king by those guys. It was lovely. Then we got word from the pub up the road that they'd just kicked out two ex-players and they were heading to the Leagues Club and they were legless drunk and looking for a fight. And these two players were Kerry Hemsley and Terry Regan. Kerry Hemsley is about 6'4". Still with a blonde mullet and a big porno biker tash, and would tear your arms off just as soon as look at you. He's a lunatic. He's an ex-biker, mental case. And he had Terry Regan spoiling for a fight with him as well. And my boss said to me, "Don't let him in." okay. So I'm still in the front door at Balmain Leagues Club, me and my mate Corey. and we're looking at each other more or less saying goodbye. You know, like, this is it. This is it, mate. We're not coming back. Over the top. And Terry Reagan and Kerry Hemsley walk up the steps, and I said, sorry, lads, not tonight. You've had too much. And Kerry Hemsley said, I'm a legend of this club. Get to the CEO now, you bastard. You know, what the hell do you know? You pommy prick. And it was horrible, you know? And Terry Reagan looked me straight in the eye and he went, you don't even know who I am. And I went, I know exactly who you are, Terry. And he looked at me and he went, what? I said, mate, I saw you knock some bloke's head off at the Boulevard. And if you'd have passed to Scott Gale instead of trying to take the bloody thing yourself, we'd have probably won that semi-final against Halifax in 88. He went, are you all supporter? I said, yeah. And he grabbed all the Kerry Hemsley and he said to him, come on, Kerry, this lad's all right. Let's go somewhere else. Smell it. I was stood in it. It was horrible. But yeah, got away with that one. Thanks to being a Hull supporter, and thanks to Terry Regan for remembering playing at the Boulevard. So there you go.
Upstanding. Alpha, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
But totally. Oh, and actually, one more as well. James Webster. One game for Hull. Jimmy Webster as well.
Yeah, that was... he played the game against Rovers after we got beat by St Helens at Wembley in 2008.
Yeah.
We ended up getting stuffed. I think it was 34-6, 34-8 at Rovers last game of the season. Mm. Yeah. Not a very fun day back then when we got beat by Rovers every... I mean, don't forget, I mean, the first 3 years they was in Super League, they got the better over us, didn't they? And yeah, it wasn't great.
Oh, actually, one more, Ben Galea. Yeah, another ex-Rovers and ex-Hull, and also Balmain. And he was one of the last players that played for Balmain and first players that played for the Tigers.
I was just going to say that, because, yeah, he must be bordering that territory, Millennium, where he come from.
Two games for Balmain, and then the rest of his career over here at the West Tigers. So he's a one-team man, really.
Yeah.
And then Rovers and Hull. So, I mean, if you're looking for a pure, you know, only ever played for two clubs... you know, that's probably the purest you're going to get, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Good stuff, that. Obviously, we've got the other side of the major to come next week, the Western suburbs. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. That goes back to 1908, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've got my work out.
Yeah, that will be a fun one. To finish off, then, Pommy Rich did confirm the rumours, the screaming in Port Macquarie on Saturday night, so I do apologise for that if you're in that area and you heard some loud pitch screaming towards Hull FC.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. I woke the household up, especially when Satire went over for that second one. I think, I can't keep quiet. I can't watch the game and keep quiet. I can't. So when Satire went over for that second one, I think I woke every dog in the neighbourhood up. It's all good.
All good. Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think I've ever done as much screaming, shouting, cursing at the TV as I've done over the past 6 months. But yeah, long may that. Well, I wouldn't say long may that continue, because we're actually, right now, the ticket office is available for members to get their tickets for our Hull FC's next game against Catalans. And yeah, that is exciting, and it's going to be very emotional. It's going to be very weird, I must say. Very weird experience. We've all got to wear masks. We're all spaced out. What I believe is all five stands as well. So yeah, that's going to be a weird experience. But yeah, I just can't wait to get back in that ground, really. So
yeah, mate. But the 5,000 Hull FC supporters will make one hell of a noise.
Absolutely, yeah, they really will. And that first rendition of Old Faithful is going to be pretty special. I'll get some videos and see what we can do next week. Yeah, but bring that on. But we've got a team to support again, haven't we? I mean, fighting for literally every inch, and we've just literally rattled and got under the skin of the masters of grinding out games regardless of performance level in Wigan. If we can do all that, then the sky's the limit. Bring it on.
100%.
So we'll leave that there for this edition of the podcast. Thanks as always for your time, Rich, and come on, you all.
All good, mate.